kick for Atleti. Good opportunity to give a shout to a blog, a US fan club of Atletico Madrid called Into the Calderon. Do some really good content for all followers of the Colchoneros. A decent base in the United States as well, following the action on ESPN Plus. Give them a follow at Into the Calderon.
It's time for a new Colchonero chat, a Monday afternoon pod. I'm Jeremy, joined by Sam. How are you, man?
I'm good, thank you, Jeremy. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I no longer have any nails left on my fingers after that game on Sunday. But other than that, yeah, all good.
Oh, the past two games, because we didn't do one after the Rio game, which had a similarly nervy ending to what transpired between Atletico and Almeria on Sunday. Before we talk about Almeria, Sam, any stray thoughts, spare thoughts on Atletico's trip to Vallecas last weekend, which was another 2-1 win for the Colchoneros?
Well, this is always weird, right? Because these two games are quite so similar,
yeah,
in so many ways. But yeah, I think we're seeing the best that this team, this system, these tactics have to offer us. But at the same time, we're also seeing little moments of weakness that show why Atleti are in third place despite their form over the last few months. And I mean, Vallecas is a very tough place to go, and it's really kind of about grinding out those wins. And so that was a very good 3 points, I would say. I mean, Leo's home record has been superb under Iola since he came in, and to go there and take 3 points away, I think, is a really strong showing from Atleti, even with everything else going on, and also changing the team and everything. I mean, I feel like there were a lot of different elements to that game that made it an interesting one, with the Angel Correa and so on. So, yeah, I feel like that was a very positive result for Atleti, for more than just the 3 points and the win itself, but also for what it meant for the squad and the players, with everything else going on off the pitch as well.
Yeah, with the tribute to Correa, Nahuel Molina scoring his first goal for the club, holding up Correa's number 10 shirt. And for a large portion of that game, probably 80, 90% of it, was a really professional display from Atletico. They looked really sharp, really in control. The Fran García golazo made things very interesting at the end for 10-man Rio, but ultimately Atletico held on. Kind of, as you mentioned, kind of similar vibes on Sunday's game, this past Sunday's game at the Metropolitano. Another 2-1 win for Atletico, their sixth in a row in La Liga, 13 unbeaten in the competition, keeping up with Real Madrid, 2 points behind Los Blancos in second place, and I think 11 points behind FC Barcelona, Atletico's next opponent, and we'll talk about that at the end of the program. Really, really good display by Atletico yesterday, Sam, not for the entire game. I think the final 20 minutes were a bit messy, and we'll talk about why that was. But what were your general takeaways from at least the first roughly 70 minutes of Sunday's game against Almeria?
Yeah, I think for 95% of the first 75 minutes were incredible. I mean, yeah, really attractive football, very dynamic, full of energy, full of attacking intent. I mean, everything that anybody could want from Atletico Madrid. I mean, I imagine João Felix was probably watching it from London thinking, why isn't it like this when I was there? Because it was that good. It was very quick. It was very on the counter, or even in possession, moving the ball forward all the time. And there was kind of a 15, 20 minute spell in that second half where it felt like Anne-Marie couldn't even get out of their own penalty blocks. It felt like they were really penned in. And just every time Atleti decided to try and find a way through, they'd do it. And in the end, the Almeria goalkeeper, Fernando Pacheco, I think, made some incredible saves. And I mean, it really could have been 4-5, 6-0. And I was thinking back to that game against Sevilla, and I was thinking it wasn't that different in terms of the chances that were there. I mean, I think it was just that I had a bit more luck in front of goal, had a bit more clinical finishing perhaps, but not a huge difference. And of course, that penalty handball call. If that had gone out Letty's way, it maybe could have opened the floodgates and the goals could have flowed in. So, yeah, I think there was some excellent football for the vast majority of this game.
Yeah, absolutely. 64% possession for Atletico. Almeria without a shot on target. They did get a goal through a Jose Jimenez own goal, which we'll talk about. 0.2 expected goals on 2 shot attempts for the visitors. Atletico generating around 2.5 XG from, I think, 19 attempts. Yeah, 19 attempts, 7 shots on target. And just really confident, fluid football throughout. Antoine Griezmann with another brilliant game. Led all players with 8 shots, 3 on target, scored twice, could have had a hat trick, but Fernando, the Almeria goalkeeper, made a couple really good saves. Yannick Carrasco hit the inside of the post around the hour mark. That also could have made it 3-0. There was a pretty stonewall handball that the referee, what was his name? Isidro, I can't remember his name.
Madeira, I think it was.
Diaz de Mera. Yeah, Isidro Diaz de Mera. That he just decided wasn't the penalty. He said the Almeria defender was tucking in his arm when he very clearly wasn't. There was a potential appeal for a penalty on the other end in the 89th minute, but it was called back for offside. So a really eventful game, but not a chaotic game, and definitely one Atletico would have won 3-4, 5-1. On another day. I feel like we start by talking about Griezmann a lot, Sam, but he's that good. He gives us no shortage of things to talk about. 11 goals in La Liga now, 8 assists, 19 goal contributions, one of the top marks in the league. 69 touches, 8 shot creating actions, that total leading all players on the afternoon. Is he the MVP of La Liga, Sam, and currently the best player in Spain?
Yes, 100 million gazillion percent for me. He is. I mean, I wrote about it in my three things column on Sunday evening, but I think that for me, the big thing with Griezmann is that he has been this good all season. Even when we think back to Atleti's worst, we were still saying then the best player is Antoine Griezmann. The only player who looks like he's capable of creating anything is Antoine Griezmann. And maybe at that point, we wouldn't say he's the best player in the league right now, but he was Atletico's best player. He was the guy who could create something out of nothing. He was the guy who could change a game. And I think it is that Antoine Griezmann is very, very good. He's in excellent form. And just in this role, he just seems to do everything. He defends, he attacks, he creates, he scores. He just does everything. But also the fact that the other contenders, so to speak, for this award just haven't maintained that consistency. I mean, Karim Benzema, Robert Lewandowski, Pedri, or I'm trying to think, there aren't that many other candidates that stand out to me off the top of my head. None of them have maintained that throughout the season and been fully consistently brilliant throughout the full season. They've all had their ups and downs. Maybe their ups are higher than Griezmann's highs have been, and maybe their downs are lower than Griezmann's lows have been. But I think just having that consistently high level is what sets Griezmann apart from anybody and everybody else. I think the only other player who could even enter into that conversation is perhaps Marc-Andre Ter Stegen. But if we get into that, comparing a goalkeeper to a player like Griezmann is a very difficult comparison to make. And then I think your end decision comes down to how you value those positions more than how you value their performances, because I think Griezmann by some distance has been kind of the outstanding player for Atleti and the most consistent player for Atleti through the season.
Yeah, the natural inclination is to wonder where this Atletico side would be without Griezmann, who's been in this form all season, even when he was playing 30 minutes a night from the bench while Atletico were negotiating with Barcelona over his obligation to buy.
This season, wasn't it?
Yeah, it feels like it was a while ago, but that was this season end of September.
August, September, saying, no, Atletico shouldn't sign Griezmann. 40 million is way too much.
But 20 million now is a bargain for a player who's doing this well and means so much. As you said, Sam, his all-around game, his contribution to Atletico's recovery in the second half of the season. You really cannot understate it, just how important and essential and fundamental he has been. Two very well-taken goals in this game. The first, a header inside 5 minutes from a Yannick Carrasco corner. Angel Correa back in the team following his mother's passing last week. Correa flicks it on at the near post to Griezmann at the back post. Griezmann is being dragged down by an Almeria defender and still heads it into the top of the net. The second goal after Almeria equalized, a really nice team move. Koke and Correa linking up outside the box. Yannick Carrasco playing that final ball. Griezmann snuck in behind the youngster Kaiki, a 19-year-old Brazilian defender. Stuck out his leg to try to block the pass, but it was far too late. Griezmann had basically already put it in the net. And the goal was initially chalked off for offside, because of course it was. We love Spanish referees. But it counted. It was ultimately the winner. No other player in La Liga has won more points for his team than Griezmann. 18 points on his own. So you take away those 18 points, and it is an extremely different story for Atletico. They would be fighting for a Europa League place. What's that?
Is that more than Elche?
Yes, it is. I think it's five more points than Elche.
He's better than all of Elche put together.
He himself is better than Elche. They have 13 Elche points all year. Points.
Yeah. Holy Antoine Griezmann alone is 5 points better than Elche.
That's incredible. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That's amazing. Just that tells you what you need to know. He himself is better than a whole team of players.
Well, I think he'd probably try and have a good go at it as well, defending, goalkeeping, scoring, doing all 11 jobs.
I mean, and it really, to me, Sam, it really is either Griezmann or Ter Stegen, but it's really difficult to compare, you know, a goalkeeper to what Griezmann's role has been, a forward slash midfielder, an interior playmaker. I mean, both players have saved a ton of points and won a ton of games for their teams, but it's really difficult to compare and estimate those impacts. Maybe someday in the future we'll be able to develop metrics that do that. But from the Atletico point of view, I don't really think there is a debate. He is clearly this team's most valuable player. I really think that's all that needs to be said. He is this team's MVP, and I think you can make a convincing argument that he is the MVP of the whole league. Another performance that really caught my eye on Sunday was that of Yannick Carrasco, who looked really up for this one from the go. It put in one of his better displays of the season. Of course, it was against a relegation candidate, but, you know, semantics. He really enjoyed the matchup with Hubalong Mendes, the French right wing back for Almeria, who was forced off on the hour with what looked like a hamstring injury. Carrasco just ran him ragged, assisted the eventual winning goal, 92 touches, really good, incisive, explosive display that deserved a goal. Assuming he leaves this summer, Sam, how much will Atletico miss him?
Well, what a question. I don't know, Jeremy. I really don't know, because Yannick Carrasco, on his day, when he's on it, when he wants to be good, I feel like, Antoine Griezmann got the goals and so on, but I feel like this game probably would have had a different result if it wasn't Yannick Carrasco and how he played against Almeria. I mean, everything seems to be coming down that left-hand side, and Antoine Griezmann said that much. He said, I want to highlight Yannick Carrasco's work because everything was coming down the left, and it's true. I mean, he was absolutely superb, but this is the issue with Yannick Carrasco, is that for every one game like this, there will be another one or two where you almost forget he's on the pitch and you just think, Yannick Carrasco, if you were on it like this in every game, nobody would be talking about Vinicius. You would be, if Barcelona were coming after you, they'd be paying 180 million, not 18 million.
Mm.
But this is the thing with Yannick Carrasco. You have to have him on his game, motivated, focused. And if he isn't, then he's just not even worth including in the team. I think that's going to be the big issue for Atletico this summer, is if Barcelona don't come in for him. I think that would be a little bit crazy, given some of Barcelona's recent signings, to not take advantage of Yannick Carrasco for 18 million euros. But if they don't come in for him and he does stay at Atleti, I mean, would he be motivated? Would it be better to try and ship him out to the Premier League or whoever will take him, rather than keep him on if he doesn't want to stay at Atletico? Because I think he's one of the players with the natural talent, the biggest natural talents in this squad. But at the same time, he's one of the players who I wouldn't mind leaving, because I feel like Atleti haven't been able to get the best out of him. And that's not a criticism of Atleti or Diego Simeone. I just don't think anybody can get that best out of him consistently. I think Diego Simeone is an excellent coach for Yannick Carrasco, and I think his decision to come back to Atletico from China says that he clearly likes working with Diego Simeone and kind of thrive under that. But I just feel like you can't get that consistency and that motivation out of Yannick Carrasco to truly exploit his full potential. But I'm not sure that he'll be able to do that at Barcelona. He'll probably be on the bench more often than he is in the starting lineup either. So it's a very strange case with Yannick Carrasco.
He's a very strange player and always has been, even when Atletico first acquired him from Monaco, you know, all those years ago. The numbers bear it out. He only has 5 goal contributions this year, 12 the year before, 16 the year before that when Atletico were league champions. And a lot of those goals and assists in the 2021 season, Sam, came in about a 6-week period in April and May when Atletico were really struggling. Luis Suarez was injured. Madrid and Barcelona were gaining. It was really tight, and Carrasco, like Angel Correa, stepped up and helped Atletico win the title. That Carrasco we haven't seen very frequently this year. I don't really think it's a coincidence that the best version of Yannick Carrasco has been seen since the World Cup. He was dreadful in the first half of the season. I don't think that's controversial to say. He was really, really bad. And it has slowly gotten better over the course of the campaign, but there were questions about his motivation. There have long been questions about Carrasco's decision-making and how much he really likes playing wing back or likes playing on the right. Simeone kind of had to try to juggle that through Carrasco's 6-7 years at Atletico across 2 stints. Is where am I going to get the best out of Yannick Carrasco? Where is he going to be the most motivated? Where am I most likely to get a good performance out of him? And to be fair to Carrasco, he has been really good at left wing back since Reinildo's injury. Nahuel Molina has been really good on the other flank. Right now, this is working. So it is a difficult question to answer because maybe, you know, Barcelona, I think, would be kind of crazy not to, you know, take up that option to buy, especially if it's between 10 and 20 million, which is what reports have said it's going to be. Atletico should be looking for a younger profile. Barca probably should too, but there's not really denying any Carrasco's talent. What is debatable is what you're going to get out of him. This is one of his most inspired performances, but, you know, Carrasco, like Morata, who we're going to talk about next, Sam, is really kind of a Jekyll and Hyde player.
Yeah, I think that's almost kind of the issue that Atleti have had this season, in that they have too many of these players. And I think that the issue for Atleti was that a lot of them were off their game at the same time, and now a lot of them are on their game at the same time. I think probably the reality of Atletico's season is somewhere in between. They're not quite as good as we've been in the last few weeks, and at the same time, we're not quite as bad as we were just before the World Cup, and the reality is somewhere in between. But with this squad, there just seem to be so many players who have those fluctuations. And I think that's kind of why Atleti are kind of missing the players, players like Gabi or players like Raul Garcia, who you knew that they were never going to be world beaters. They were never going to be a world-class player. But you knew that every week, you knew the kind of level that they would perform to. You knew the kind of role they would do. And that's the issue that we have now with this Atleti squad, is that a player like Yannick Carrasco, a player like Alvaro Morata, they can win games for you on their own, but they can also contribute absolutely nothing. And it's that fluctuation, which I think as a coach, that must be incredibly frustrating for Diego Simeone. But I also think it's why Atleti fans have come to love Reinildo as an example, because that is Reinildo. Reinildo is a Gabriel Garcia, who nobody is going to select Reinildo in their best ever Atletico 11. But if you have to pick your team of the season this season, most of us would probably include Reinildo in some shape or form, because he's just the only player from August through to December you could put out there week in, week out, and you knew that you would get a 6-7 out of 10 performance. And you probably wouldn't get any 8 or 9 out of 10s, and you probably wouldn't get any 4 or 5 out of 10s, but you knew it was always going to be 6 or 7. And that's the issue with Carrasco, with Morata, is that, yeah, one game is an 8 or 9, but the next is a 4 or 5. And it's a really difficult one as a coach to build your squad. And I feel like that's where Atleti have gone wrong a little bit, because these players do come at cheaper rates in the market, because if they were consistently 8 or 9 out of 10s, they'd be at 10 times the price. Atleti couldn't compete. And that's kind of why Atleti do this. But I do feel like that we've lost that kind of stable core with players who are just consistently okay, that was kind of part of Cholismo and part of building that some of the great Atleti teams was having those players. I mean, even looking back to that season in 2020, 2021, you know, players like Mario Hermoso, who wasn't the best defender in the world, but he played consistently well through that season. And since Christmas, we've seen that as well. So, yeah, just having those kind of stable influences in the squad, I feel like makes a huge difference.
Yeah, Gabby was so reliable. You could always count on him. Godin was always reliable. You could always count on him to be there. Arda Turan as well for 2 or 3 seasons was Mr. Consistency on that on the flank as that wide playmaker. Simeone is working with basically a 17-man squad right now. Memphis and Savage, part of that 17-man base, weren't available Sunday. Jose Jimenez suffered as a result, letting in an own goal at the end of the first half, which we'll get to. But you look at the players in this squad who don't play. Jeffrey Kondogbia once again did not play and actually picked up a yellow card despite not playing. Sergio Reguilon, Matt Doherty, Tomole Ma didn't play. Sal Niguez gets on in the 94th minute when Simeone had only used 2 out of 5 available substitutes. This is a squad that clearly has talent, as we've talked about, but who are the most consistent players here? Griezmann, Koke, Oblak. In other words, the linchpins who have been in and around this squad for the better part of a decade. And those are the guys who are going to be the toughest to replace, and I do not want to be in the room when Atletico are deciding how they're going to replace those players, but we don't have to talk about that today. I don't have to get anxiety over that. You have a squad with other guys like...
You
know,
give you a chill pill, Jeremy.
Yeah, I need one. With Jimenez, who through injury or form just can't be relied on every week. Rodrigo De Paul has been up and down. You know, Llorente, I think, is another one who has been kind of a consistently core player, but he's suspended for the Barca game next week pending a possible Atletico appeal due to yellow card accumulation. Witzel's barely played in recent weeks. He got a rare start on Sunday in place of Savage. Carrasco, Hermoso has been wonderful, but again, the previous 2 seasons were awful before these last few months. So you have the small squad that Simeone likes, but most of the players in it are going to run either real hot or real cold, and Alvaro Morata might be the most emblematic of running hot versus running cold. Morata comes on in the 65th minute on Sunday, Sam, and Atletico's level immediately drops. He comes on in place of Correa, which on its face, I think, makes sense. But when Morata comes on, Atletico immediately slow down. They get so static. And part of what was working so well against this Almeria back line, this 5-man defense that Ruby put out there, is because Atletico were shifting attack points really well. Griezmann was dropping deep into midfield. Correa was dropping deep. You had Carrasco torching Almeria's right side in the first half, and in the second half, Llorente and Molina were able to link up for some really nice passages of play. And then all that changed when Morata came on.
Yeah, and also the press became quite disjointed when Alvaro Morata came on. But I think there was a telling moment just as he came on a couple of minutes after, when he was running through and the ball came off the back of his own heel as he was running, and the pass back to him kind of bounced off and went away and lost possession. I think that kind of set the tone for the afternoon. But also, to be fair to Alvaro Morata, I feel like it was quite a difficult one for him, this one, because as we were saying earlier on, it was very fluid, very fast, very intense kind of football. And to come on as a substitute into that kind of situation, it could be quite tricky. And Alvaro Morata is not Angel Correa. They're two very different type of kind of number nines. I think we saw that when we had Memphis Depay starting and Alvaro Morata coming in, that was a more like-for-like kind of swap, and that was where Morata could come in and immediately make an impact. But coming on for Angel Correa, or coming on earlier in the season for João Felix, or whatever it may have been, it's not the same swap. It's not a like-for-like. So then the whole team is adjusting how they're playing at the same time as Morata is trying to catch up and get into the rhythm of the game. And I don't think it ever really happened. And I mean, going back to what you were saying about the lack of options or the squad size, it was interesting watching the players warming up down the touchline, because there are only four players that warmed up at all, and they were the three subs of Saúl, who got a couple of minutes, Morata, Pablo Barrios, and Thomas Lemar, who eventually didn't get on. But I mean, I think it says a lot about the squad options and so on that Diego Simeone has, but also about seeing these players get more and more tired and so on, because I think it was tiredness that was costing Atletico towards the end of this game, and just the fatigue setting in. And Diego Simeone clearly didn't feel like he could call on too many of those players to come in and change the game. But I mean, Morata struggled. I don't think Pablo Barrios had his best game. I think he kind of had the same issue that was coming in and being a little bit almost kind of thrown in the deep end and struggling to catch up with the rhythm of the game and settle in. And I think that's probably a situation that Atleti have to work on over the next few weeks, is rotating this squad around a little bit more and still being able to maintain this kind of performance like we saw for the first 60, 70 minutes.
Yeah, because it was really kind of at the snap of a finger, Sam, that Atletico were playing, again, this really confident, fluid, fast-moving football that, you know, that a lot of supporters often clamor for. And then in the last 20 minutes, it really, Atletico's press really kind of fell away. Almeria made some really positive changes. Ramazani comes in with 20 minutes to go as part of a triple change, and instantly creates danger from a wide area where Almeria previously could not even get the ball out of their own defensive third. Almeria were just being smothered for almost the entire game to that point. Somehow still had a goal, though, because Jose Jimenez put it in his own net. Really a weird one. Almeria get a goal in this game despite not having a shot on target. And that, in part, made the game and the ending of it more nervy than it had to be.
Jeremy, I have a confession for you.
What's that?
I have an irrational hatred of Axel Witsel. I don't know why, but I just can't stand watching him. He's not a central defender. He's no longer really a midfielder. I don't really know what he does. I don't really know what he contributes. He seems to get injured every 5 minutes, but not even like injured and then he's out for a few games. Injured that he's on the pitch and he goes down, and he's down for quite a while on the pitch. And I mean, there are certain things in his game where you say, okay. And there were a couple of times where he got caught for pace and you say, okay, this is a 34-year-old guy. I mean, he's going to get beaten for pace. We just have to accept that. That's why he's... But then there were times where I think this goal was one of them, where he just completely switched off. Yeah. And it was like he was kind of like looking into the stands, I don't know, looking at somebody's banner, asking them to give him his shirt instead of looking at the game or the ball. And it was like, come on, I mean, you accept that from a young guy or something like that. You'd accept it if Pablo Barrios got caught distracted and not really paying attention. But for an experienced pro like Axel Witsel to be making those kind of mistakes, I mean, just mind-blowing. And the fact that he's going to be here at Atleti for another year unless somebody tries to take him off our hands, it fills me with dread. I feel like we kind of got rid of Felipe and replaced him with
Witsel,
with a guy with a very different but just nice haircut.
we do love a good fro. He does have the afro, and that's a plus, but it's not really a big plus, is it? Yeah, I mean, Witsel, the honeymoon phase ended some time ago. And it feels like a long time ago that he was dropping really 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10 even, performances in central defense. It feels like the August and September games were a real long time ago. Witsel's one virtue, I guess, is his passing. He misplaced only one pass on Sunday, 61 out of 62, 9 progressive passes. But
well, that's easy when most of your passes are to the guy stood next to you.
That's right? True. Or when they're really short range passes and you're not trying 40 yard diagonals like Mario Hermoso drives.
Yeah, like the FIFA thing where you just want to boost your passing stats and you're 4-0 up and you just pass it between the center backs.
Just want to maintain 75% possession. That's what I want. But Witsel he's in large part shares responsibility with Jimenez for this goal, because Leo Baptistão, who loves a goal against Atleti, I think he has 4 or 5 of them now since he left the club nearly 10 years ago. Baptistão just kind of shoves him off. Like, Axel, you're a center back. You're a central defender. You're supposed to get in his face. You're supposed to stop him from advancing on the ball into the penalty area. And Witsel just kind of goes down easily. Jimenez has to cover. Jimenez has to dive and try to block the shot attempt, which he does, but unfortunately it goes in. It just floats in past Oblak. But yeah, Jimenez really suffered on Sunday.
Where Witsel is different, because I do feel like Hermoso, I do feel like Jimenez, I do feel like Savage or Inilda would have just taken the tactical foul. If they were going down, they'd just grab out an arm and pull Leo Valdisao's shirt and take him down. They'd take the yellow card and they'd take the free kick. But, I mean, for Axel Witsel, you'd think that as an experienced pro and somebody who's played at a very high level that he would have that same kind of attitude. But, I don't know, it just kind of feeds into this irrational dislike of him that I have, that I feel like he's kind of here. I don't know, just the stuff in the press complaining about not playing and so on. I don't get the same feeling of, you know, like a David Villa or Luis Suarez who's come to Atleti to kind of their one last big club, show that they've still got it, fight and give everything they've got left. I feel like he's more, I want to come and experience Spain and the sun and earn a decent wage at the same time.
Well, that's great. You can go play for Elche then. You can go play for a team lower in the table. The demands here are higher. And Witsel, I think there's kind of an element of this, I think, that where Witsel thinks he's too elegant to get involved in those kinds of duels. He's not used to them because he's not a natural center back. He's a number five. He's a pivot. He's supposed to be helping build up play in a possession-based team, and Atletico aren't always a possession-based team, as we know. The frustration with Witsel is very understandable, Sam, and I've said this a few weeks ago, and I'll say it again, I don't really... Almeria, I guess, is the kind of ideal opponent for him, right? They're a team fighting relegation. They're on the road where they haven't won a single game this year and now 14 tries. This is the best kind of game for Witsel, where the stakes are supposed to be kind of low. And even still, the last two goals Atletico have conceded at the Metropolitano, Sam, were with Witsel on the pitch. This one on Sunday and the goal in the 6-1 and the series goal in the 6-1 against Sevilla. I don't think that is coincidental.
No, not at all. I mean, I see why Atleti signed him. I see why he's here. I feel like even Diego Simeone kind of saw him as a valuable asset in the first half of the season when there wasn't much else available. And now it's, we don't really need you anymore. I'd like to think that, I mean, there's a lot of talk of this contract clause kicking in after he played at the weekend, but I'd like to think that there's some kind of agreement or plan that he won't be around next season. Just because I think logically Atleti do need to rebuild that defence, and I'm not sure that you can rebuild a defence with a player like Axel Witsel filling in as kind of the third or fourth choice central defender. But I mean, even now, if Reinildo was fit, would he have played at the weekend? I mean, there's a lot of factors, and we all know that Atleti don't have too much money to be going and spending on anybody at the moment. But
yep, not without.
If there was one player I would be happy, I mean, even Jeffrey Kondogbia, I wouldn't mind Jeffrey Kondogbia staying. I'm not sure he's the best player in the world, but if he stays, I don't think it's an issue. Axel Witsel, I feel like him being in the squad is a bit of an issue.
Yeah, he's going to be 35 next year, and I know La Liga has become a league for older players. It's become a more defensive league with all the forward talent that has left or just simply not arrived. But Witsel and the defense as a whole, Sam, I don't think Surianja, who's going to come in from Leicester on a free transfer, I don't think he's the solution either. I think there's a reason he was available on a free transfer and why before this past weekend, when Leicester got shelled by Man City, I think there was a reason he had played just, I think, one game, literally one game this season before this past weekend after Leicester sacked Brendan Rodgers. So Atletico have a lot of shuffling to do on the defense, a reshuffling to do on the defense, and not a whole lot of money to do it. So needless to say, it will be really interesting to see what they do there. And I also think, I don't know if you agree, but I also think this team needs another killer forward. And that is also going to be tricky because Atletico could be carrying five forwards next year if João Félix returns from his Chelsea loan. Because you'll have Memphis, you'll have Griezmann, you'll have Correa, you'll have Morata, and you'll have maybe not João Félix. And again, I don't know if you agree or not, but with so many of the chances Atletico had yesterday, they needed to put a third or a fourth goal on the board, and a better team relative to Almeria, a better team would have been able to maybe get that second goal. Maybe it finishes 2-2. Maybe it finishes 1-1. Either way, Atletico might not win this game against another opponent.
I think it also says a lot, doesn't it, that we're, what, 13 games unbeaten, and here we are complaining about that.
I know, we can't be satisfied.
No, but I do get what you're saying, I do get where you're coming from, and I mean, since that 6-1, and I mean, we had 3-0 in Valencia, but we haven't looked kind of really deadly in front of goal, and that was the feeling against San Maria as well, was that we were creating a lot, but we weren't finishing a lot.
Right.
And yeah, I think with that list of strikers, it's the same thing. All of them are the kind of strikers that you say, yeah, I'd like him in the squad, but he's not going to be the main man. But the issue is that we have five of those guys, and that doesn't give you room or the budget or anything to have that sixth guy who's going to be the main man and to rotate the other five around him.
Yeah, and it's just not going to happen.
I think everybody, 98% of Atletico Madrid fans would agree that moving João Felix on is the priority in the summer. I'd take 80 million if somebody offered it, and take the 40-50 million euro hit on him, because I just don't see any future for him at Atletico. And I feel like if he was loaned out for another season, it's probably more likely that his value will drop even further than where he is right now. And I think Chelsea has kind of shown him up in a lot of ways, in a similar way to Saul. And I mean, we saw Saul at Atletico, that playing out of position, wasn't very happy and wanted to go and prove himself and do that at Chelsea. And we saw that all it did was say, actually, you're far better off playing out of position at Atletico Madrid than anywhere else. And João Felix is now going through that for himself. And I think it was a pretty disastrous choice of move, which I think reflected the fact that there weren't many teams in for him. And I think it says a lot. And you wonder in the dressing room, if there were any players who weren't 100% convinced in this kind of João versus Cholo debate, you'd think now they're going to be saying, yeah, I'm going to stick with Cholo because he does actually know what he's talking about. It's not just his defensive football or whatever Mateus Cunha's dad is busy saying, but there is more to it.
I really didn't think when the season began, Sam, that all of Renan Lodi, Felipe Montero, Mateus Cunha, and João Felix would be playing in the bottom half of the Premier League, while Atletico were 2 points off second in La Liga. But here we are. Diego Simeone has once again emerged victorious. And just for the listener, a quick João Felix update. If you didn't catch Chelsea's game over the weekend, he directly contributed to Brighton's winning goal at Stamford Bridge in their 2-1 victory there. A cheap giveaway outside his penalty area, and it led to a Julio and Tiso Galazzo with about 20 minutes to go. Just walloped it into the top net, and it came because João Felix was being sloppy with the ball. I know that that's not surprising to you, Sam. It's not surprising to me either. I guess very quickly before we preview the Barca game, I don't know how much longer Chelsea are going to be so enamored with João Felix. They have much deeper problems than him, of course, institutionally, with their ownership, but Joao's not gone there and impressed. He's got 2 goal contributions in, I think, 11 Premier League games. Yeah, 800 minutes now. They've seen what he can do and what he can't do, and the things that he can't do are very damning and glaring, and he's not showing an inclination to improve. He's trying too hard to impress, and it's only tanking his own value.
Yeah, and I think in a way, because playing to Atleti's hands, I mean, there's a lot of stories about the financial situation of Chelsea, which they certainly have lots of money, but they're just trying to find out how they can spend it and still meet financial fair play and everything. But if they can find the way around that or whatever it may be, I feel like João Felix is the kind of thing that he's that kind of player that a team like Chelsea, who've had a terrible season and need to make a big signing, a player who would accept not being in the Champions League next season, who they would pay a big fee for, and they wouldn't be, why he's not worth that or anything like that. I feel like João Felix is that kind of player who will get fans off their seats and will be that big transfer fee, that statement signing, without necessarily having anything to back it up. I feel like if you're a Chelsea fan, maybe signing João Felix this summer is an exciting prospect. And they have seen glimpses of his talent.
Yeah, it's a very tiring situation just thinking about it. And Atletico and the player are both so much better away from one another. you only have to look at the respective tables in their respective leagues to figure that out. Let's move on, Sam, and talk about next weekend's Partidazzo at Camp Nou at Spotify. First hosting third, Barcelona hosting Atletico, and Barca aren't playing too well right now, Sam. It has been 15 years since they've gone three consecutive games without scoring a goal. That's what's happened to them. Shelled in the Copa del Rey by Real Madrid, and then back-to-back goalless draws between Girona and Getafe. What do we think is going to happen next Sunday up in Catalonia?
I have absolutely no idea. No idea which Barcelona team is going to turn up. We have to remember that, yes, Barcelona have not scored a goal in three games now. But we also have to remember that Barcelona have only conceded, I think it's two goals at Camp Nou this season in La Liga.
Ridiculous.
And I mean, which is just absolutely crazy. I think they're on track to concede something like 14 goals through the whole course of the season, which completely smashes the records. I think it's actually Atleti in 2015-16, and the other one is Super Depor, one of their Super Depor seasons. I think they conceded 18 goals. And at the time, that seemed like absolutely unreal. How can that possibly be? And now Barcelona are on track to surpass that by some distance as well. I'm just going to see if I can find the actual stats. But, I mean, the defensive strength of Barcelona, I feel like if I had to pick out a prediction for this one, I'd probably say another 0-0 draw, just because I can't see Atletico gambling and really going for this one. They open up enough to allow Barcelona some space to actually find a goal. But at the same time, I don't feel like Barcelona have that need to go for it. A point against Atletico at Camp Nou is a decent result, and then they can start to pick up points again. But yeah, this bad run of form that they're on, I think that could influence things, because that will mean that Barcelona will want to open up a little bit more, because a draw, 0-0 draw against Atletico Madrid is a good result. A 0-0 draw against Atletico Madrid when you haven't won in three games is not so much. And yeah, just looking at it now, it's Barcelona have conceded 9 goals in 29 games. So they're on track to concede around 12 goals this season. The record low was Atletico in 2015-2016 and Super Depor in 1993-94 when they conceded 18. Yep. So 6 goals less than those two teams. And I think we think of that Diego Simeone 2016 team and that Super Depor team as incredibly defensively strong. And this Barcelona team is even better.
It kind of bothers me that this Barca team is going to have the defensive record because just the number of times Ter Stegen has stepped up and rescued them. I would need to look at the expected goals against again, but I think they should have, based on like a shot quality against and other metrics like that, they should have conceded close to double what they've actually conceded. This Barca defense, and especially against top opponents, which I don't know if we consider Atletico a top opponent right now, based on the last 3 months of form, I'd say they probably are. Against top opponents this season, Barca's defense has been ripped to shreds consistently, like in the Champions League, in big league games, in the Copa del Rey just a couple of weeks ago. And Barca are in kind of a really weird place because their season is essentially over. They have a huge lead atop La Liga that they're not going to blow. I know about the Excel spreadsheet that has gone viral on Atleti Twitter. I'm aware of it, but let's be realistic. They're all of their... Atletico keep winning. Let's see if they make a fool out of me, but they have a 9-point lead over Madrid with nine games to go, and Madrid are in two other competitions. Barca are going to win the league. So they have this weird kind of... What's the motivation? A Partidazzo, a big game like this, could give them their motivation. And if Pedri and or Frenkie de Jong returns to their midfield next weekend, that is potentially a very different proposition for Atletico. The way Barca play with Pedri versus without is starkly different. They are a much worse team when that man is not in their midfield.
Yeah, I was just looking at the XG stats, and and overall in La Liga. They've got 22.75 XG against, but they've only conceded 9 goals. So that's a difference of almost 14 goals less than they would be expected. And
there you go.
I mean, I think the next lowest in expected goals against is Real Madrid in 26.96, so just over 4 more. But the actual difference in goals conceded between Barcelona and Real Madrid is 15 goals. I mean, incredible, really. I mean, Atletico are the net second best defence in La Liga at this point. And there's a difference of 12 goals, and the XG is a difference of 7 between Barcelona's XG against and Atletico Madrid's XG against. So, I mean, some great goalkeeping, some poor finishing. I mean, it just really upsets me in my soul that Marcos Alonso playing centre-back could break a Diego Godin record.
Oh, don't tell me that. So wrong. Oh, don't even tell me that. Oh, you're right. Marcos Alonso. Oh, man, that is frustrating.
Marcos Alonso and Andreas Christensen, the best centre-backs in La Liga.
Yeah, and Christensen has legit been pretty good. And was a really shrewd signing on a free transfer from, ironically, Chelsea. But Marcos Alonso, wow, I have no idea why they acquired him.
And Jordi Alba.
And what's left of Jordi Alba, yeah.
Just wait for Jordi Alba to leave Atletico, the best La Liga defence ever, and then come and join Atletico on a free and make Renan Lodi look like Roberto Carlos.
Man, you know, I wonder if that actually is going to happen, because Barca have been trying to get rid of his salary for 2 years now. With no success. They had this move to Inter apparently sorted out over the summer, but he ixnayed it. Atletico have a clear need at left back with Reinildo's injury. They don't want to spend money / you know, whatever, can't spend money. You know, I wonder if that is not a realistic possibility for the summer that Jordi Alba comes to Atletico.
I've heard some whispers, but not much more than whispers, and I like to imagine that that's all they are and that nothing will come of it, because, I feel like for both of them, it's for both Jordi Alba and Atletico Madrid, it's not a move that you particularly want to happen. I'm thinking Luis Suarez. Atleti were desperate for Luis Suarez at that moment in time, and Luis Suarez was desperate to stay in Spain and a big team that could compete. So the only real option is Atleti. Jordi Alba, I feel like Jordi Alba doesn't particularly want to play for Atletico Madrid. I don't feel like Atletico Madrid particularly want Jordi Alba past it, left back. But I guess, is he a decent wing-back option? And then I think, I've just thought of this, but when you put it into context, Jordi Alba or Sergio Reguilón, I'm not sure which is worse. Like, would you rather fall from a building or be run over by a truck? Neither, but...
Who would play less, Reguilón or Alba?
I feel like it's almost impossible to play less than Sergio Reguilón.
Yeah, 5 games this year, less than 100 minutes total. What a signing.
And I was excited when he signed, I think.
Because it came so quickly, right? It made you think, well, Atletico have a plan here. They were prepared for this. Well, no, they weren't. Reguilón, thank God it was only a dry loan, because if they had paid any transfer fee for Reguilón, ruinous. Just a disaster of a signing. But Simeone has, well, as he...
Matt Doherty deadline day signing, where you think, wow, Diego Simeone's a genius. He's brought in this right back to free up Nahuel Molina, to free up Marcos Llorente, and then he's played, what, 12 minutes?
12 minutes, yeah. So between Reguilón and Doherty, who both started the midweek friendly against Beşiktaş in Turkey, they have played a total of 110 minutes between them. Those are your backup fullbacks. Just masterful squad planning. But Simeone, as he has so many times over these last 11 years, 12 years, as he's done so many times, and it's why he's so highly, handsomely, richly paid, is he finds solutions. He makes it work. He'll change the formation. He'll change the players' positions. He'll change little subtle things, like tactically, strategically. He'll find a way to make it work and keep Atleti in the top three. And he's done it again. Atletico were... They've had a 16-point turnaround on Real Sociedad, which I did not think they would do. They were 7 back of La Real, and now they're 9 up after the Basque Derby result on Saturday. Wow.
Yeah, I think we also need to recognize that Real Sociedad have kind of collapsed.
again.
Which is something that they tend to do in the latter stage of the season. But, I mean, it's been some turnaround. I mean, you know, Christmas, the World Cup, talking about Diego Simeone can't stay without the Champions League. There won't be enough money to pay his wages. And here we are, where you're having 12 points clear of Betis in fifth now. And which part of that is that not just Real Sociedad, but Real Betis have collapsed a little bit as well. And nobody's really come on. Villarreal haven't been that convincing. Athletic, inconsistent. I mean, nobody's really kind of stepped up with Betis and La Real stepping off. So, yeah, but that gap has really opened up now. And I think we can at least rest easy about qualifying for the Champions League.
Oh, yeah. A 12-point gap, as you said, between third and fifth. And these teams right below Atletico that played so well in the first half of the season, La Real, Betis, Villarreal, Athletic 2, Rayo to a degree, it's just over a 38-game season. If you don't have the requisite depth and experience even, it's just punishing. It takes a lot to succeed and remain consistent over a 38-game stretch. And La Real, as nicely as they play at times, as many good players as they have, again, struggling with multiple competitions. They were playing in the Europa League and the Cup, whereas Atletico weren't. And it comes back to bite you. It ends up costing you. But La Real is still in a pretty decent position. Do they still have a head-to-head with Betis? I think, yeah, they do. On the 25th. Yeah, they have a head-to-head at the Villamarín, and that'll be a big game.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big game in that race, yeah.
Oof.
No, I'm just looking now at the table for expected points, which is where they calculate what points would have been if the expected goals had been the real goals and so on.
Mm.
And up the 2022 section of the season would have had Atleti in sixth with 23.56 points from 15 games. Behind Valencia, of all teams.
Wow.
Valencia, of course, in the relegation zone, and looking increasingly like they're going to be relegated. And then in the 14 games since then, Atleti had 28.71. So, yeah, there's a 3-point difference there, but it's not actually as big a difference as you might have thought. So, but yeah, I mean, the other teams around them have completely fallen off. I mean, expected points. Real Sociedad are in fourth, but have underscored their expected points significantly. Real Betis are even lower. They're eighth on expected points. You know, just teams that have completely fallen apart since the World Cup, basically.
And Atletico have obviously been so good since the World Cup, largely. 13 unbeaten, looking to make it 14 next weekend. And if they do beat Barcelona at Camp Nou, Spotify, it would be their first win at that stadium since 2006. They would get to within 10 points of Barca. Madrid could close to within 8 with 8 rounds to go. It would take really a miracle for anyone other than Barcelona to win the league. But, you know, there might be a couple of doubts creeping in. Barca, for the last couple of months, really haven't been playing that well as their season's petered out. So we will see how next Sunday's Partidazo plays out, and we'll be right here to talk about it when it's over. That's going to do it for today's edition of Colchonero Chat. I want to thank my guest, Sam Leverage, for hopping on the show today. Thanks, Sam.
Thanks for having me, Jeremy.
You can find us both on Twitter. He's at Sam Leverage. I'm at JB Barron. You can follow our written work at intothecalderon.com, and you can subscribe, listen to all new and archived episodes of Colchonero Chat and the Partido a Partido podcast. As part of the Fans First Sports Network, you can find us anywhere. Spotify, Apple, you name it. Just search Atletico Madrid Podcast Network. If you want bonus content and exclusive Atleti insight, become a Colchonero Chat amigo at patreon.com/Colchonero Chat. And I now have to try to open my phone to stop the recording. That'll do it for this edition of the show. Thanks so much for listening. And until next time, adios.